You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. Today is a mailbag episode. We're going to do one segment of that. We're going to talk a little bit more about Brian Schottenheimer, the Seahawks' new offensive coordinator that we've talked a little bit about during this offseason, but you know, we really haven't zeroed in and focused the conversation around him. So we're going to do that, and then we're going to continue our position battle of the day segment. We're going to do a new position group and see who's going to make the team. We're going to be 100% accurate with our predictions. But before we do all that, quick intro. My name is Grant Goldberg. I'm the co-host of this Locked On Seahawks podcast, and I do social media and graphic design work for SB Nation's Lakers site. And Spike is a writer with The Stranger. He is calling in, longtime listener, first-time caller. Spike, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm coming through with a new microphone. And by new microphone, I mean a bad microphone because my computer's in the shop. This is thrilling updates, almost as thrilling as the news of the delay of the opening of Tottenham Hotspur's new stadium in London that's forcing the Seahawks-Raiders game to relocate to Wembley. Grant, how are you feeling about your favorite soccer team being unable to open a stadium on time after being unable to do any transfer business this window?
It's completely unsurprising after the latter, but you know what? I'm used to disappointment with a lot of my favorite teams.
Oh, it's got to be hard to be a Lakers and Seahawks fan. Oh boy.
No, but
shots fired.
It's okay. It's okay because the thing I was most looking forward to was the retractable pitch, because I thought that was just a really cool feature. But I mean, I guess they're gonna have to deal with it. So it's not a huge deal. The game's still gonna happen. It's not like it's being moved to the U.S. It's a cool thing to have a team go overseas and play over there and you know, grow the game of football, and hopefully, you know, well, I'm not going to say grow the game of football for, you know, safety reasons, but, you know, people like football for very specific reasons. But yeah, I'm excited to watch the game still. I'm indifferent about the stadium because I was pessimistic about it being done on time in the first place.
Yeah, no, I hear that. Look, as a supporter of a British football team that was able to get their stadium expansion open after, what, like 15 years of trying to get it approved, I get it. But hey, can't all be Liverpool fans. We can all be Seahawks fans here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, which means we can all be Brian Schottenheimer fans. But are we?
We can try to be.
Yeah, we can certainly try to be. Grant, I don't look at Twitter as much as I used to. I know there was some Schottenheimer controversy on the Twitter yesterday. I also know Bob Condotta wrote a great feature on Schottenheimer. Schottenheimer did his second full press conference of the preseason. We got a lot of shoddy out there. And so I guess my question to you is, how are you feeling now that we've seen a little bit of on-the-field evidence? We've got a lot of media out there around him. How are you feeling right now, mid-August, on the shoddy train?
I'm a little more optimistic than I was when he was hired, but it's not that much more. What they showed in the preseason game against the Colts was encouraging. They moved the ball downfield pretty easily. I think that, you know, even with, you know, Austin Davis, he didn't play that bad, and he threw one bad pass. Even Schottenheimer said that's his words. But there's a lot to like during that one drive with the first team offense with Russell Wilson at the helm. They got the running game going. They, you know, worked in the tight ends in the passing game. They threw it, you know, past the sticks to the wide receivers. So there was a little bit of everything, and there was a lot to like from that one drive. The thing that worries me is Schottenheimer's magic number, which is 53. There in Condota's article is feature
what,
about
what is that?
Okay, I was about to.
What is the 53?
Okay, so Brian Schottenheimer says the real key in his offensive philosophy is rooted in his magic number 53. In his career, Schottenheimer has found that hitting the number through any combination of pass completions and runs in a game is the biggest predictor of victory. And Schottenheimer says, and I quote, "If you rush the ball, say, 30 times and throw 23 completions, that was like the second determining factor of wins and losses after turnovers. Some weeks it's going to be different, and it's going to be 33 completions and 20 rushing attempts. But we're always going to go in with the understanding that we should be able to run the ball and believing and expecting we can do it at a high level." Now, just because they hit 53 doesn't mean they're going to win. Just like winning the turnover battle doesn't mean they're going to win. We saw that a little bit last year. But I'm expecting this team to go a lot of run heavy, you know, have a lot of run heavy games where they try to set the tone physically. And, you know, whether it's going to bite them in the rear end, then, you know, so be it. But I think that when you have a guy like Schottenheimer who, you know, was told to run the ball, so he just runs the ball as many times as he can, it's going to be interesting to see what the team, how the team responds. And how the thing that I'm watching, too, is how Schottenheimer has kind of evolved after some time away from the NFL and some time at Georgia. So I'm wondering how he adapts to a more modern NFL, and the positive thing in my mind about him is that he says that they're going to get the running backs involved in the passing game, and that's something that I've kind of stuck to this whole offseason. I've said it before on the show, and I'm excited for that because it's the way the NFL is shifting. The running backs aren't solely just, you know, you give them the ball and block for them. They're involved in more facets of the game. So, you know, hopefully that's a good thing for the Seahawks. And come this time next year, we're looking back on a good year from Brian Schottenheimer, an outlier year.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of that 53 thing, the big problem with it is obviously that, like, you can't strategize around that.
Right.
Like, the pace of play is the pace of the game. And, you know, say also the fact that if you get a lot of drives, oftentimes the other team gets a lot of drives. You know, it's a weird way to look at clock management. And it's kind of meaningless. What I thought was more interesting, and I think we've seen this historically with Schottenheimer, which is that his results as an offensive coordinator are not great, but his results as a quarterback coach have been very good. Part of that's been that he's been working with good quarterbacks, but in Russell Wilson, he's again working with a good quarterback. Hopefully he can get good results. As he was talking about the me to you factor, which is what he calls it, which is the unspoken communication that can happen between wide receivers and quarterbacks, making sure they're on the same page, making sure they're anticipating each other's movements and decision making, and building that, especially Schottenheimer talked about building it with Brandon Marshall, building it with Nick Vinette, that those guys who aren't Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett, who haven't been working with Russell Wilson for years and years, that they can quickly get on the same page with Russ. If that's what he's emphasizing, that actually bodes really well. And given Marshall and Vinette's potential physical skills, you know, they're both big dudes. They both can catch the ball in traffic at their best. We have questions on both, one because he hasn't done it yet, the other because he's done it for so long that he's 75 years old. But if they can do it with Russell Wilson, we're going to be in good shape this year. So for me, the Schottenheimer, like, high-level strategy thing, I'm still nervous about the offensive coordinator side of things. The play calling is, like, in terms of, like, rhythm and setting things up, you know, like, that's where I'm still nervous. We'll have to see what happens. But in terms of getting the quarterback, maximizing Russell Wilson, getting Russell Wilson to play at the highest possible level, and correctly identifying that Austin Davis is a better quarterback than Alex McGough at this point in time, you know, like, his grasp of the quarterback position is a big positive. So overall, I'm still a little worried, but there are reasons to be optimistic.
Yeah, I think there's just a lot to be seen. There's a lot to play out. And, you know, Charles McDonald, we've had him on the show before, said that he had problems getting the ball to Nick Chubb and Sony Michel at Georgia. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see whether he's going to be able to efficiently get the running game going while also, like you said, you know, getting the most out of Russell Wilson. And if Russell Wilson can build on the year that he had last year with a competent running game, you know, that's something that's going to be really, really good for the Seahawks offense. It's going to take a lot of pressure off him, and he's not going to have to account for, like, what was it, like 84% of the Seahawks offense, I think it was. But, yeah, if we can get a healthy mix of just decent, okay to good running, and Russell Wilson, who's the same, if not, you know, more improved this year coming in from last year, then, you know, I'm going to be happy with this Seahawks offense.
Absolutely. All right. We're going to be back right after this with some mailbag questions and another position battle of the day. So keep on listening. This is the Locked On Seahawks podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Guys, the Seahawks are back. They're back, reloaded, with Brian Schottenheimer, like we just said. And to me, the best way to watch a Seahawks football game is live and in person in CenturyLink with the 12s all around you screaming their heads off. At the right time in the game, of course. So, what's the best way to get tickets to the Seahawks game? Through VividSeats.com. And you can get the tickets off of VividSeats.com using the promo code LOCKEDON for 10% off your first order. Now, this is important because NFL tickets aren't very cheap, and it's rare to find good tickets at an affordable price. And so, where do you find that? Like I said, VividSeats.com. Now, you need to act fast because this promo code ends at the end of August. So, look at the schedule, plan around, you know, when you want to go, and then pull the trigger on VividSeats.com using the promo code LOCKEDON to get 10% off. Remember, before August ends, or else this promo code is rendered useless. So, make sure you take advantage of that and get yourself in C-Link to cheer for your Seahawks. VividSeats.com. We are back with the next portion of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are still with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. We're going to ask, well, no, we're going to answer some questions asked about this Seahawks team, asked about some different things. The first question that popped out most to me was a prediction for a breakout Seahawk of the season, because we haven't really talked about one clear breakout Seahawk. It could be, you know, some random person that makes the team, or it could be someone who really didn't contribute last year or the last couple seasons. So that was a really interesting question from Sheen from Lakers Outsiders. So, Spike, I'm going to give the floor to you first and ask, who is your breakout Seahawk of the season?
Yeah, other than, of course, Michael Dixon, our punter.
Well, would it really be a breakout?
That's a great point. Yeah, so I guess this would be a year one to two leap. And Chris Carson doesn't really count, I guess. Kind of want it to be Chris Carson, but you know what, I'm gonna go with Nas Jones up front.
I like that.
He's back practicing at full speed. I think he's gonna be able to hold off our new imports from Minnesota to get the bulk of the snaps on run stuffing downs. He's just so physical and fast. He's able to provide some of that interior pass rush, but also be physical in the run game. He was really good when he was healthy last year. And I think another year in the system is only going to make him better. I think we're going to be talking about Nas Jones a lot this year, defensive tackle. Grant, who you got in the breakout Seahawk realm?
I think amongst Seahawks fans, this guy was, you know, praised pretty heavily for stepping in last year. But more on a national scene, I think he's going to break out a little more with an expanded role. And that's Bradley McDougald. Yeah, I think that he has a great opportunity to, you know, step in and show what he has to offer for the Seahawks team. And he's gonna, and more eyes are going to be on him. It's going to be more eyes taken off of Cam Chancellor, obviously, with him stepping away from the game of football. I think that Bradley's going to show that he's capable of playing in the box and getting tackles at the line of scrimmage. I think that he's going to, you know, rack up the tackles elsewhere and be a really, really capable pass defender. To have another strong safety to be able to set the tone and run defense, it would be huge for the Seahawks. And I think that Bradley McDougald has a great opportunity to show that he's capable of doing that. He showed it in spurts last year. But if we can get a little more consistent performance in that area of the game, then I think that, you know, it's going to be a really good safety pairing through the whole year with Earl Thomas and Bradley McDougald, because Earl Thomas is going to come back, Spike. He's going to come back.
Yeah, every time they ask Pete Carroll about it and he doesn't say anything, I get more and more nervous. But I think McDougald's looked really good at both spots. He's only looked better so far this year. So I think that's a great call.
Yep, I think that Nas Jones definitely is a good choice for that, because he obviously dealt with the injuries late last season, and he's going to have an expanded role this year, and he's definitely going to fill it in and be a formidable mm-hmm. defender. Next question I have from Muskan Juwanda is, can the Seahawks realistically win the Super Bowl this year? Now, it depends what your definition of realistically is. Like, if there's like a 1 or 2% chance, then that's more than some other teams. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. My answer is yes. My answer is yes, they can, in the same way that the Saints could last year, where if this rookie class is really good, then and it would be incredible if it were as good as the Saints was last year, but it's not impossible for Rashad Penny and Rasheem Green hypothetically to make massive impacts on this team. It's unlikely, but it's possible. And I guess what I'm saying is, basically, if you have Russell Wilson, who is a top six quarterback in the league right now, I think we can. I mean, who are the other guys? Would be Rodgers, Breeze, Brady, Roethlisberger, and Ryan. I put him ahead of Roethlisberger in that group, on par with Ryan, so either four or five in the league. When you've got a quarterback at that level, I think you can always win a Super Bowl, because you have margin for error. And the Seahawks team is shallow, and we are a big injury or two away from having a losing season. But if we stay healthy, the rookies come in and gel, you get in the playoffs. I mean, the Rams would need to crater a little bit. You get in the playoffs as a division winner. Anything can happen when you've got Russell Wilson. We've seen it. We saw it when we made the Super Bowl against New England. I mean, we were getting just demolished by Green Bay and were able to come back in that game because of Russell Wilson. When you've got Russell Wilson on the team, doesn't matter what else is there. If everything else goes right, you can win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think we've seen it. To his rookie year, if not for the defensive collapse against Atlanta, you know, they make that NFC Championship game. Who knows what happens, because, you know, they got the best out of the 49ers in the late game that season. The thing to me is that you really need to stay healthy to win a Super Bowl, and you need guys to, you know, step up and really, you know, stick to their role and play it well. And I think that it's going to depend a lot on the role players. It's going to depend a lot on the special teams, the guys stepping in on defense. And, you know, if we get good performances out of them, you know, I think that, why not? You know, yeah. the Seahawks.
No, and this is can they? Like, again, I'm down on this team right now. Yeah. I think this is a 7 or 8 win team. But can they win? Again, you got Russell Wilson, absolutely. I think there might be teams, let's say, I don't know, I think San Francisco has sort of a similar outlook to the Seahawks coming into the season. I can't see them winning the Super Bowl this year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though I think maybe on an average season they win the same amount of game as the Seahawks, their upside just isn't the same because, I mean, and look, maybe Jimmy Garoppolo is that guy, but he had, what, 5 picks and 6 starts last year? Like, that ain't great. And as I understand, he had 3 more drop picks. He could have had 8 interceptions in 6 games last year. Like, that ain't good enough to win the Super Bowl. So, like, we still haven't seen from Jimmy Garoppolo that he's Russell Wilson. Even if the rest of that team is, like, a little younger and faster, I still like the Seahawks' upside because at the end of the day, quarterback matters so much in terms of being able to win games and make a run in the playoffs.
And I think out of, you know, when you look at a quarterback and knowing how to get there and what it takes to get there, not many in the NFL know, like, Russell Wilson. You mentioned the performance against Green Bay. I mentioned the performance against Atlanta that could have gotten them at least close to it. We saw them demolish the Broncos in the Super Bowl, and they were, you know, a yard away from another Super Bowl against the Patriots. And so when you look at, you know, what it takes to get there and, you know, how to win games when you're almost there, Russell Wilson is, I'm going to say, the guy you want besides maybe Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. He beat Aaron Rodgers. So, yeah, realistically, they can. Will they? Probably not. But, you know, if the Seahawks put themselves in Super Bowl contention this year of all years, then this is going to be a super fun season.
Yep.
Okay, my next question is a question from Hani Amadian, and he asks, which Seahawks player would win a game of Super Smash Bros. If they were the characters? That's a great one. I'm super excited for Super Smash Bros. And I love the Seahawks. So
yeah, I'll let you pick first.
I think the answer, you can go one of two ways. You can either say Bobby Wagner or you can either say Earl Thomas.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's Bobby Wagner. I mean, versatility, physicality, special moves. The Wagner uppercut is really powerful. So, yeah. Who do you play with, Grant, when you play?
I like Star Fox. I like just being able to move around and
finesse. Guy needs a laser gun. Ugh.
Look, man, I like Samus a lot too. Who do you play?
I'm going to date myself. Most of my Smash Brothers was played on N64, so it was balanced really differently.
No, I played a lot of N64 too.
Okay. Well, I played Kirby a lot.
Kirby,
off the edge.
Kirby's the easiest character to use in Smash.
Well, I'd play DK as well.
Yeah. I'd say Earl.
Kirby's not easy anymore. Kirby was easy back in the day because you could play off the edge. Now it's easier to come back from that. You can't just camp that edge. Anyway, this is wild.
Yeah. All right. My comp right now, Bobby Wagner is closer to Donkey Kong and Earl Thomas is closer to Kirby.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, exactly. Bobby Wagner can step on you. And if you time it right, you can do the step and the clap up off the top.
Right.
That's a power combo. That's a real humiliating move. And that's and if Bobby Wagner is playing as Bobby Wagner, he ain't going to mess with that. We know that.
Yeah, unless he's playing against Robert Turbin.
Oh, boy.
Spike, if...
All right. Do you have any more questions? I think we have... I got one, which is, which Seahawks player would my dog Edgar be? That's from Bill Stevens at Still Beavens. And the answer... This is a tough one. So Edgar, for those of you who don't know, is my dog. He's a golden doodle. He's lanky. He's bouncy. He's been on the shelf a little bit. He got some foxtails in his paw, so he's had some injury issues. But he's got, you know, a lot of upside. Friendly dog, but not afraid to bark it out. My instinct is, like, he was never really a Richard Sherman type. He has more personality than, like, a Paul Richardson, but he sort of has Paul Richardson's game a little bit. He's too big to be a Tyler Lockett. He's middle age. Oh, man, this is really tough. Let me think. Was he Michael Bennett? I don't know. KJ. So he definitely likes to play defense. He's a ball hawker when it comes to defense. He's a good tackler. What is it? I guess he's like a Shaq Griffin. I guess I'm talking myself into him being like a Shaquille Griffin, not a Shaquem Griffin. I think he's a Shaquille Griffin.
He has all his paws.
All paws, yeah. He does. Although I did have a nightmare a couple nights ago that he lost a paw. That was a bummer. That was tough to wake up from. Come on. What's going on in my brain, guys?
I'm glad Edgar has all his paws. And you know, from the description, because I haven't had the joy of meeting Edgar yet, but there's, you know, as you were describing him, Shaquille Griffin was the one that I had in my mind, just based off your description of Edgar.
Yeah.
I
was going to say the other one is Nico Thorpe, potentially, just because if you throw a ball and there's like a faster dog out there, there wouldn't be a faster dog than Nico Thorpe dog. But what Edgar's really good at is like defending him as that ball is coming back. So he's a great special teams player. He'll like basically bother that dog into dropping the ball and then bring the ball back to you. Could even be a Cliff Avril at that point with the forced fumble. So just going to throw out a couple more names. Cliff Avril, Nico Thorpe, and Shaquille Griffin.
Or a combination of the three. A super defender.
Hey, that's a great player.
That's a fantastic player. The next question I have is a little bit fun. Sticking to the script a little bit. This is from Noah Jaffe. He asks, which Seahawks jersey would you buy if you were buying right now, factoring in likely longevity, who is playing fun, avoiding moral hazards, and whatever else you'd factor in? Go ahead.
No, who you got?
Okay, well, if you haven't gotten this jersey already, I'd obviously suggest Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson. Those are the classics.
I got a Russ jersey. That's the safest play, yes. But I don't think it's the coolest play.
There's some cool plays out there, some aggressive plays. Likely longevity, you can go Shaquille Griffin. I think that's a cool play. On the outside, this is really tough. I don't think obviously there's Doug Baldwin, which is a safer play in my mind.
Getting a little older, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But, he's teetering into the Seahawks legend tier almost.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're never gonna be wrong wearing a Doug Baldwin jersey. I got two more. I got two more names for you.
Okay, no, go ahead. Because I was gonna say it's a little thin going into the wide receiver group because you don't know if Tyler Lockett's gonna really be back, and you know the other guys are on a 1-year deal. So,
yeah, I got two names for you. First one's Dwayne Brown. Dwayne Brown just signed to a big extension. Great in the clubhouse leader, great guy. You don't have the moral hazard. You're showing that you care about line play. You're showing that you care about the post-Tom Cable era. So for me, Dwayne Brown would be high on my list. The other one, come on, man, Michael Dixon, baby. Michael Dixon. Get that punter jersey. Be the guy out there talking about 9 different types of spin. Michael Dixon.
Look, I'm not saying that you need to go get a Michael Dixon jersey. But if you want to show that you're a real Seahawks fan and not a fake fan, then, you know, it's probably a required purchase.
Yeah.
As for running backs, I'll probably go Carson.
I mean, like, the tricky thing is, like, you got to go Penny. They put a first-round pick in him. They're going to use him. Like, I like Carson more. I don't think – but it's a running back. Unless you're running, even if your running back is Le'Veon Bell, like, don't buy a running back jersey. It's like buying a jersey of a pitching prospect. Like, what do you do? Like, it's just a bad investment.
Counterpoint, this argument doesn't matter. And if you want to spend your money on a running back jersey, then it's your decision.
Well, we're giving advice.
Right.
Man, I can't have my people, my Locked On Seahawks listeners, buying a jersey and then regretting it because I said, hey, do whatever you want. Look, giving advice. I'm the cold hard parent of this podcast.
Look, man, if someone is dead set on buying a running back jersey, you're gonna factor in amount of fun and you know, I think that Chris Carson is the most fun. You make great points about them spending a first round pick on Penny, but as I said on another show, they're not afraid to move away from those picks if they have to. They'll be stubborn about it at first, but they will. Now, no, hopefully it doesn't resort to that, and Rashad Penny is a future Seahawk great.
Yeah, well, and we've talked about the running back group in the past. Do we have any more questions? I think we don't. I think that was it, right?
Yeah, I think that's all the questions.
Well, we talked running back position group last week. What position group are we going to talk about this today? You're going to have to keep listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. We'll be right back after this position group battle of the day.
We are back with the final portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and we're going to continue our position battles of the day.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get into the tight end group. We were with running backs yesterday. We're going to talk about some tight ends. We're going to get in the trenches. We're going to talk about blocking. We're going to talk about pass catching. Spike, who makes this team as a tight end?
Yeah, so I think at this point, the big question is sort of, when is Ed Dixon going to be ready? How do they deal with that?
Or does it matter if he's ready?
Well, I don't think they cut him. I'm going to say it one more time. I don't think they cut him. But the question is, because this is really easy. If he's out for 6 weeks, say, into the season, they just put him on. He's on the non-football injury list, so they can actually just leave him on that, which is great. And they can do that anyway. I believe they can do that. They do that, and he's out for the first 6 weeks of the year. So if that is the case, then we're going to see Vanette, Disley, and Swoops, which I love. I love Swoops' upside. I've said it over and over again. I love Swoops' upside. But we've invested what we've invested in Dixon. They like Dixon for some reason. So if Dixon is healthy, the question is, which of those guys doesn't make the team? I hate it, but I think it's Swoops. I think they try to slide Swoops on the practice squad. And I think that's just the reality of the situation. I think Will Disley's shown a bunch. I think Vanette is the most versatile guy on the team. If he doesn't. And actually, Sam Gold, who I believe does stuff for The Athletic now, was at Field Goals. He broke down Vanette's series against the Colts. Saw a lot to like there. Saw him evolving in his route running. So, you know, I think, and then you got Ed Dixon, another blocking guy. I think that it's pretty clear that those are the big three. I don't think, given the sort of depth needs at other spots, that they'll come into the season with more than three guys. You got any thoughts on that? Any disagreements?
No, I don't. I think that it's the same three guys. It's Dixon, it's Vanette, it's Disley. And I think Swoops is the pretty easy choice, no matter, you know, how much upside he has and you know, whether, you know, he has potential more as a receiver than a blocker. But in my mind, if Will Disley is making it an easy decision to leave Swoops off this active roster, then, you know, that's good for Will Disley's development and potential of what he can, you know, bring on the Seahawks team. There is a lot to like from a blocking standpoint. He had a couple catches too on Thursday night, and so I'm excited to see, you know, maybe a little bit more of an expanded role and just a little more time on the field in this next preseason game, a little bigger of a sample size. But yeah, it's the same three guys. I wasn't big on Ed Dixon signing in the first place. For him to be out throughout the preseason, maybe into the regular season, you know, that's, you know, kind of bad because you signed him to a 3-year deal. But I'm talking myself into Nick Vanette. I think he's firmly on this roster after, you know, last week saying that maybe, you know, they move on from him, being that he didn't really see the field much of the last couple seasons. But I think that the chemistry that he showed with Russell Wilson, and again, this is off the first preseason game, but the chemistry he showed with Russ is big. You know, he's the target that he kept going back to and trusted after a drop. So I think that's big for Nick Vanette. I think that he has a way bigger role this year, obviously, with Luke Wilson and Jimmy Graham leaving, even with Ed Dixon coming. So, yeah, I'm agreeing with you, shocker, on the tight end group. But I think it's an easy choice, a fairly easy thing. I think most people would say it's those three guys that'll stick on the roster.
Yep, I agree. All right, well, that does it. Another episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast in the bag. Thank you for listening. Please buy your tickets from Vivid Seats for us one time. One time. Do it.
Literally one time. Or you
Yeah, because you get your promo code locked on, get 10% off at vividseats.com. Go rate and review us on iTunes. Listen to other podcasts on the Locked On Network. They got so many. They got all the teams. They got Locked On NFL with Sage Rosenfels, among other great guests.
So
great.
Make sure you listen to, you know, the Locked On NFL podcast. You keep listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. And, yeah, please, please go leave a 5-star review on iTunes if you're a fan of the show. It doesn't take all that much time, and it's, you know, we really appreciative with you guys, you know, supporting us, supporting the show. So make sure you go and do that if you are a fan of this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's about it for this show, unless you have anything else to add, Spike.
Nope, that'll do it.
All right, so for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off.